Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department. The world discovered together.
But first this morning, Between Dog and Wolf is the intriguing title of a new show that's touring all around Ireland soon. And it brings together two men who have more than a few words between them. Comedian Tommy Tiernan and storyteller Dr. Martin Shaw. You're both very welcome to studio.
Thank you.
Do you insist on the doctor thing or is that just...
No, I don't. Okay. I don't.
You're not a qualified doctor.
I'd be a doctor of philosophy, but that would be...
Yeah,
I'm no good if there's a cardiac arrest.
Oh, that'd be marvellous. You hurt your leg and a doctor of philosophy...
Did he ever really live? Did he ever really live?
You're already fun. So, Tommy Tiernan, the entire country knows you, but introduce us to your friend, Dr. Martin Shaw.
So, Martin is a storyteller and has thousands upon thousands of stories in his pocket. Stories that last a minute, stories that last a weekend. My beautiful wife Yvonne and my son Theo went to Dartmoor a few years ago to hear him tell a story that took 3 days to tell. The entire Odyssey. So he's a strange and gifted and off-grid individual. Very much at home here in Ireland with our tradition of yapping and narrative and all that. And I wanted to start kind of not moving away from stand-up, but I wanted to start maybe grounding it a bit more or something, or inquiring to see if there were other moments possible in stand-up. And I thought, well, why not do it with the greatest storyteller that I know? And that's Martin. So I asked him, would he be interested in coming along and doing 3 weeks of hardcore touring? Hardcore. But he was blown away by the romantic images that he got in his head of Roscommon and Westport and Castlebar and Sligo and Navan. And he said, I'm in. So, yeah, we start that shortly.
And I'll come back to that. And I'm intrigued by the name of it. But would it be OK or fair to say, Martin, that you remind me a little of John Moriarty, the great Irish philosopher and writer. And, of course, he lived at the foot of Bangerton Mountain in Kerry. And you know his writings, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I'd know his writings well. I never met him. I know a lot of people that knew him, funnily enough, primarily because he was their gardener. So not a lot of people in the west of Ireland knew John. Would have probably struggled a bit with the books because they are tough country on occasion. But amazing storyteller, tremendous thinker. And you would glimpse him on English telly now and then in the 1990s. And you remembered him because of his extraordinary hair. Remember his hair?
Yeah.
And
I remember my own hair.
Yeah. And so, I would have known him. And it was about 6 years ago when we met. And I came over, and one of the things that I did on my pilgrimage over here was to go to Moriarty's old publisher, Lilliput, where I met Anthony Farrell.
Yeah.
And we got talking, and I'd been teaching in an American university, and I'd said, you know, young kids gravitate to what John was doing. On the one hand, he's this rural Kerry philosopher Catholic, but on the other hand, he has this great rattlebag of stories from all over the world. And it's usually when a great tree falls in the forest, sadly, within a few years, you don't hear much about them. But with Moriarty, there's a sort of growing momentum. Do you remember we would have been in Kerry about a year ago, some sort of Moriarty festival
that
I think his niece had put together, Amanda, and lots of young people.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember folks turning up and just plunking harps outside on the street and their eyes rolling back, you know?
When I was growing up, like when I came to my full maturity, which was quite a while ago, when I came to my, in the mid-1980s, it would have been the Waterboys.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been The Hole of the Moon and This Is the Sea. They would have been anthems for people who refused to be conscripted into the economic way of life that was been suggested by school and university. And to hear now that John is doing some of that sheltering as well is great.
And of course, as a kid, the great storyteller was Phil Lynott. My God. You know, hearing stories of Cuchulainn and that whole Ulster cycle, but with Thin Lizzy behind him. It was in a lot of our English hearts, especially like myself. If you go back a bit, and it's all Mayo and Connemara and the family anyway.
Is there much of a difference between old Irish stories and old English stories?
Yeah, there's more grief in the Irish. They're more extreme.
Do you take responsibility for that?
I do. It's quite a few cab drivers have brought up on the way back and forth from Dublin Airport.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome the reason for our sadness, Dr. Martin Shaw.
Moving swiftly on, Tolkien, the great Tolkien, said an interesting thing about Irish myth. He said Irish myth is like a stained glass window that someone has thrown a brick through. So it's filled with glorious fragments, but it's quite hard to put the whole thing together and hold it in your hand. Now, what he was really getting at was that there is a quality in Irish myth which is very much like being in a dream. It's very dreamlike, the Aisling. But the kind of stories that Tolkien loved, which were Saxon and Norse, there's more of an A to B to C. You get there, even the metaphors do a different thing. Mm. And I just don't think he was tuned really for that Irish world. So there's the joy is more extreme, but the grief as the flip of that coin is terribly deep.
Where does the title come from of your show, Between Dog and Wolf?
I can't remember. I remember I came up with... Are you claiming responsibility?
Absolutely, 100%.
No, I think I came up with it and then you changed it.
Lies. Okay. Already the fictions begin. No, I think between us, maybe it is you. I know it. Between Dog and Wolf describes cocktail hour. You know, it's dusk and dark, dog and wolf. Now, in Devon, we have another phrase for it. We call it the dimpsy time. And the idea around the dimpsy time, and this is an old Celtic idea, is you should only make important decisions during the daylight hours. But once dusk falls, everybody knows that you're working to different rhythms. And that's the time that traditionally you tell these kind of stories. Mm. So my memory of Between Dog and Wolf is a description of dusk.
So it's that idea of that the show will be pitched somewhere between domesticity and wildness. Neither fully one nor the other, but somewhere in between.
Yeah. Mm. So to throw in a big idea... storytellers, Shanachie that last, can do two things. They can tell what you could call pastoral stories and prophetic stories. Pastoral stories are the stories that bring the tribe together and they remind you of what we stand for and they give you a tremendous feeling of weight and anchoring. Hector's very good at pastoral stories. Prophetic stories, you're very good at, which are stories that rattle and startle and this thing happened on the way home from the fair. And you live in the tension of both.
So when you talk about Tommy being very good at prophetic, I mean, for you, Tommy, how different is this show and storytelling to what you do a lot of the time, which is stand-up? Like, you tell stories when you're doing stand-up.
Yeah, I don't know yet. to be honest with you, I really don't know. So all I can tell you is where I've been digging. Okay. So I don't know what I'm going to come back into the house with. So I started with Mary Heaney's book, was it Over Nine Waves, where she retells the old Celtic myths of Cú Chulainn and the Tuatha Dé Danann and all these people. And I did find that hard to get into. So then I went to Thomas Kinsella, who did a translation of The Tán, which is about the cattle raid of Cooley and Queen Maeve wanting the prize bull for a year. And it's one of the differences then between, say, Irish and English. In the English translation, so the fellow who owns the bull is over in Cooley and Queen Maeve wants the loan of this bull for a year so she can have equal stock to her husband because they've been boasting to each other about who's the most powerful. And he had this marvellous white bull and Maeve had nothing to match it. So wants the loan of the brown bull of Cooley. And with all the things that she's going to give the owner of the bull in return, one of them is, and in the translation, it's a kind of a dead phrase. It says, tell him I will also offer him the friendship of my thighs. And that I read that and I went, there has to be a better way of saying that. So I dug up an Irish translation by a wonderful man from Connemara called Darragh O'Scully. And his phrase, even though I don't know exactly what it means, just sounds nicer. His phrase, his translation of friendship of my thighs is Cordius mus sliasta. And I defy any man to be able to resist the promise of Cordius mus sliasta. So I dug into Thomas Kinsella for a while and then from him I started reading all old fairy stories and folk tales that had been collected around Ireland in the late 1800s and stuff like that. And then I found my way back to Marie's book again. Mm. So I'm kind of ingesting all of this material but I've no idea how it's going to come out. I've no idea what shape the fluency of it will take. It won't be a recital. It's not, and then this happened, and then that happened. There has to be spirit and bone. If it's just bone, it's a recital. If it's just spirit, there's nothing to hold on to.
But will you both go on stage? Like, I'm so used to television shows with a structure. So will you plan what you're going to do beforehand?
We have just literally got in the car together. we knew we were going to do this. But I think for both of us, a lot of the joy and the adventure is in the doing. And to anticipate too much ahead of time is a bit of a false economy for what we're after.
Fair.
So who knows where we're going to be in 3 weeks? I would not have a clue.
And where have you gathered your stories, Martin?
I'm very lucky in the sense that I grew up in a house without a television. We were just broke. We didn't have any money and we didn't have a car and we didn't have a phone. But we had lots of books, and I had and have a mum and dad that love oral culture. They love plays, they love preaching, they love stories. I had time on my hands, so I was always reading and always telling stories. Do you in Ireland, do you ever have a thing at school called a careers convention? When you're getting to about leaving cert, you've got 15 stalls, and there's the army, and there's you become a lawyer and do this or become a journalist. And my fantasy is at the very end of the careers convention, there's a kind of a leafy little body. But there's an old man smoking a pipe, or a woman with 9 breasts lactating deadly nightshade. And she's saying, you could be a Shanachie, you could be a storyteller. I didn't know these people even existed.
I think your careers convention is what we called a careers night. They came and told us what we could be.
Those were banned in Navan. Yeah. They didn't want people with notions. You were handed a job, bus driver, postman.
I see.
But now I know, Martin, also, you've studied divinity, isn't that right?
Yeah.
Is that correct? And I know, too, that some of the old pagan stories get retold with a Christian prism or spin to them. What might have been maybe an old pagan god became a Christian god. And did that happen the same way in any of the stories you collected?
There is a reason why we would know a lot of old Irish stories. And mercifully, it's because actually the Irish Christianity grew and developed in a very, very different and very un-Latin way to how it took place in England. And there was just much more of an interest in oral storytelling. It is fairly obvious when you read those stories where they are dolloping the Christian bits on. Mm. But underneath it all is enough murk and enough magic to stay in touch with what the story, I think, is really trying to disclose. Something Tommy said a minute ago I think is important. These stories are robust. Mm. You're not going to hurt their feelings.
No.
You can do all sorts of things with them and just let them, it's an odd expression, let the story have its way with you. Stories fall apart, myths fall apart when you use them to make a point about some modern thing. Stories themselves, and Moriarty would have said this, you want to be working not with a pelt, but with a wild animal. Stories are alive in the way that they are. So whether that is an old pagan story or it's one of these incredible saint stories that we have over here that are beautiful and filled with ecology and reverence, I think they are different recipes. It's like being a chef, a storyteller. In each meal, you're like, okay, what's the ingredients? And then you're in a room with 200 strangers. What is the medicinal thing that needs to happen that night?
So I listen to you, and I know, because I've interviewed you, Tommy, lots of times, and I know there's kind of a spirituality about yourself. We've spoken about faith before, your brief flirtation with the priesthood. But, like, is the reason you two get on so well, and is maybe at the root of a lot of the stories you're going to tell, some kind of spiritual element or other element, John Moriartyisms?
You're never in charge of who you're attracted to. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You just follow an impulse. And myself and Martin mightn't be friends after this tour.
I think you will be.
So Martin would suggest, in order to get to know a story, go for a walk into a forest and tell the story out loud to the trees. Now, that's such an off-grid, off-kilter, marvellous way. That's a Martin Hayes way of being in the world.
Yeah.
You know, that is otherness. So that's one of the reasons why I'm a
So will you do that?
I've tried it.
And?
And, well, and we'll see what happens on account of it, you know.
But how did it feel to you when you did that?
So natural. So natural.
Did it?
Yeah. It's there's a bog road near where I live where the, all the bodies are buried. And so I walked up there and I told the story out loud to the hedges.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, people would think that you were half mad, but if people don't think that you're half mad, then something inside you has died. So you have to carry a notion of madness, a madness that does no damage to the people around you, inside you somehow.
Mm.
And I took a walk up the bog road and there's this group of hedges and I told them the story.
See if you...
I love it.
Yeah, go out, tell a story, see if you can make a rowan tree blush. It's possible. That's what the little rowan berries are. It's when you're doing well and they go, go on, say it again. And you tell them stories. I lived in a tent for 4 years. That's how I became a Shanaki. I became a storyteller.
How did you live in a tent and
well,
why did you live in a
tent? If you remember, as you will, just about the last century,
yes,
you will recall that there was a time when wandering around without screens wasn't a problem because we simply didn't have any. And mercifully, and I had no idea what was coming down the chute, but I, as a young lad in my 20s, I spent 4 years living in a black tent on a succession of hills trying to pick up this very old notion that, that Tommy and I are rummaging around in, that stories are extremely good for our health, extremely good for our souls. And in some way, this is a very big idea, but it's a very Irish idea, that the earth itself thinks in myth and stories.
What I love about you, Tommy, though, is that you're always kind of pushing yourself to do something else. Like you could just be the brilliant comedian you are. But like even you did the chat show, it's a huge success. And now you're doing this, which is again different. You're kind of, you challenge yourself all the time.
I think my cortisone, the chemical that's released in your body when you're stressed. I love it. I must do. I have an addiction to, like, I'm very attracted to my own detriment to stress. Do you know the kind of compulsions people have? And there are geniuses out there. My father told me this great story. So my father got a job with Chagask, the Farm Advisory Board or whatever. And he was sent off around the farms of County Meath as a young advisor, full of notions. And it was around the time when the big thing in farming was to get the most out of the farm and almost that farms became little businesses. He called into this fella in County Meath who had, I think my father said, like it was a 150-acre farm in Meath, but he had very few cattle on it. And my dad went, visited him anyway, and he said, you could make more money doing this, more money doing that. You could increase this, you could increase it. Grants from Europe. The man looked at him when he was done and he said, so what would I want to do that for? Amn't I live in handy? So that idea, amn't I live in handy? And that somebody not choosing productivity, not choosing money, not choosing more work, because he knew himself, amn't I live in handy? And I don't have that in me. I don't have that live in handy thing. I would love it. I would. I'm more the thin, stressed, busy little bee, always looking for new flowers.
It's actually lovely having spent time with the two of you. I can see why most of the tickets are sold out, because it's just a very, I don't know, very relaxing. It's almost like therapy listening to the two of you talking. Why do you think people want conversations like this right now?
All the stories we generally remember begin when you are in some way outnumbered and outgunned. And many people feel like that at the moment. And we are in political situations that are so complex and nuanced and old, we feel breathless. And you want to go to a deeper well. The Mexicans call this kind of thing the river beneath the river. They say it is a deeper truth without the use of facts. So we're using ancient technologies here, archaic technologies.
Yeah. Storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, it's been my pleasure to talk to you both.
Always such a delight to be in your company, Miriam.
No,
always. Honest to God, You're a shining brightness. And thank you for having us.
I'm so happy to have you both. And listen to me, Between Dog and Wolf, it's going to be in theatres all around the country, from Letterkenny to Tralee, from Ennis to Navan, and finishing in Vicar Street on the 6th of October. As I say, most of the shows are sold out, but there are some limited tickets available. They'll sell out this morning after this. And the details are all on tommytiernan.ie. Dr. Martin Shaw. Tommy, I can't call you doctor yet.
No, Mr.
Mr. Tommy, dear. Thank you both for being my guest this morning and best of luck with them.
Thank you.
Thank you.